Call the second monthly meeting of the Port of Port Townsend for Wednesday, July 25th to order. Stand for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, on the agenda, we have a different agenda than was posted on the website. So does everyone have a new agenda that should have been on the table? If you don't.
Yeah, it's highlighted in yellow.
Revised agenda? So looking at the revised agenda, are there any additions to the revised agenda that anyone has?
I make a motion to approve the agenda, revised agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the revised agenda is approved. Public comments. Before we start public comments today, I want to read a little message. There's been significant interest in the port's leasing policies and the efforts of staff to address this issue. The Port Commission and staff welcome vigorous and heated debate. Feel free to tell us where we are or the staff are wrong or have made mistakes. However, the strong feelings on this issue cannot lead to personal attacks such as being accused of lying or being deceptive. Those comments cross the line from a comment on performance to an allegation of an intentional bad act or a deceptive act. Using words like telling lies, sabotage, decision to allow special treatment, complicit in deception, these all infer intentional bad acts. This is not the way that we conduct ourselves in Port Townsend or Jefferson County. Besides that, it's counterproductive. You can't talk with someone you're insulting. So the chair will stop any such comments. And I want to hold out an example of someone who's very good at giving very sharp criticism but not being personally sitting right in our audience. That's Bertram. He could give lessons to a lot of people. Thank you. Okay, so now we'll move on to public comments. Melinda.
Thank you, Melinda, District 2. Commissioners, at the last meeting, I asked you all to show the port staff the respect that they deserve. Having worked closely with Commissioners Putney and Tucker, I know you both to be men of high integrity. But I want to thank all three of you for issuing the rebuke to the Maritime Trades and the Maritime Center. They have indeed created a very hostile work environment, full stop. But placing the image of the tenant that assaulted Ms. Gibney on the wall and within their presentation of the Maritime Economic Study was beyond the pale. I do not understand why they felt it necessary to turn what could have been a positive presentation into something ugly and discrediting. Again, thank you all for doing the right thing, even though I ask. But on this note, I see that it has been recommended that an ad hoc committee be formed around the port's rate structure. If the maritime folks do not get everything they want, will this hostile behavior continue? How do we know they will not be attacking staff throughout the process? I believe that the committee must include folks that do not have a vested interest and folks that have a financial background so that numbers can be qualified and quantified. I feel strongly that the port staff is in a very difficult position. There are rumors out there that have been perpetrated, whether due to being totally uninformed or malicious, I do not know. How can a staff be asked to keep the public informed when stuff is simply being made up? Like putting up condominiums. Did you guys actually discuss that? Or that all land leases were going to immediately jump to 65 cents per square foot? If so, I must have missed the meetings. Neither the staff nor the commissioners can stop rumors, but you can quash them when brought forward. Please continue to support the port staff in doing their jobs. It's clear that they are getting the results requested. Thank you.
Thank you, Melinda. Any other public comments? Go ahead, Pam.
Hello, I'm Pam Petronic.
Generations of dreams and successes have built our maritime community here, and our deepest and highest hopes are for this maritime place to be here for our future generations. We have quantified this significance to our entire county through the economic impact study that shows over 2,000 jobs at living wages and taxes contributing approximately $12 million between the county and the state. Number one, we're all on the same team. Let's focus on our priorities and the tools we have. We want to support our commissioners to be able to do this. Tell us how and what we can do to help. Number two, we are currently facing three critical issues: stormwater, lease, and budget. And we already have three separate task forces working on these, and others will join. We have and continue to meet with leadership from our public schools, from other educational programs in our community, from the city and county councils, from regional representatives of the state, from tribes who all want to support in our maritime community. We have incredible resources in our community that want to help support, like biologists, we have accountants, we have pile buck drivers, past mayors, past court commissioners. The economic impact study is our gift to you, the commissioners, and to the county and the city. It's a gift so that we can all work together, and we are capable and willing to work together, and we are here to support you in creating and sustaining a successful maritime community. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Go ahead, Catherine.
Hi, my name is Catherine Burrell. It's got to be something strange. I'm here on a Sunday. I don't know why I haven't showed up for a lot of port meetings. And I was just writing my notes, and I just wanted to mention that I'm not speaking here as the Maritime, although it's certainly one of the reasons we chose to live here, and we daily go down to the waterfront in the boats. But rather as somebody who's worked a lot in economic development and innovation development, and primarily the 240 farms that we have now. And I went to both the last October meeting and last week's meeting, and I just want to really support that. I know that I followed the port for the last 15 years. When Sam came aboard, I really respected her skills and community process, and I went to her, to Steve, talked to you, and said that I brought in a $5 million grant to the port, and it got sent back without a single meeting or a single event because we weren't all on board. And Senator Murray, who had signed off on the grant, called me irate and said, "Don't call me again, I'll call you. If you guys can't get your stuff together, we're not getting money for you." And as somebody who's written at least $5 million worth of grants and started a lot of small businesses in this community, I just want to support that we cannot qualify for any grants unless we're a collaborative, working together community. Whether that's the empowerment zone that was designated in Clallam and we didn't get it, whether it was the grant for the small mosquito fleet development, or this grant for the stormwater and the ecology, which scares me that ecology could not think we're working along with them on the stormwater issue, because it could really close it down. So as somebody who's done a lot of group processing in a lot of economic development community, I'm here because it's not a port problem, it's a community problem. We know for 15 years we kind of had benign neglect and ran the port really cheaply, and that was what we needed to do to keep tax base low. But just as we've rebuilt the school district and we've rebuilt the hospital, it's the port's time to now get community tender, loving care. And I just want to be with you to encourage you to be collaborative. I have a t-shirt that says, "In the times when we can be anything, be kind." And I would just encourage you to do that and pledge a lot of qualified, wonderful people in this community to work with you on advisory committees and whatever.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Who's next? Okay. That being all the public comments, we have an unusual meeting arrangement today. We have an executive session for potential litigation, which is with our previous court attorney, and so he's here now and has to leave. This is going to be kind of a long meeting, so unfortunately we're going to have an executive session right now. How long would you say that's going to be, Seth?
About 15 minutes.
15 minutes? So unfortunately that means everyone's going to have to leave and then come back in 15 minutes, then we'll...
Action or no action?
And there's no action. Oh, and this is under RCW 42.30.110(1)(i), potential litigation.
Write that number down.
Yes. Let's yeah. Party out.
Okay, so let's go ahead and reconvene. So, has everyone had a chance to look at the consent agenda? All in favor? Aye. The consent agenda is approved. Okay, we have no second reading, no first reading. So our first item of regular business will be the Chief Chetsmoka Trail. And we have a couple of representatives from the Jamestown Squalum Tribe that will tell us about the trail.
No.
And our one representative.
And one representative from
Native Connections Action Group.
Native Connections, okay.
Okay.
It's about the trail and our role in it.
Mm-hmm. So the Native Connections Action Group's chairwoman, Jo Blair, had an idea that we would like to encourage more presence of Chetsimokas in Port Townsend. We knew there was a grave and there was a statue and a park. And so she proposed a trail. And with that, Celeste Dieback, who was also a tribal elder of the tribe and also a Native Connections Action Group member, met with Ron Allen and took it away.
When I went to meet with Ron Allen, I had to wait my turn, even as a tribal elder. And when I, shortly before I met with him, two guys left his office, and then I went in his office. And I told him what we wanted to do here in Port Townsend, and he said, you need to pony up with those two guys who just left. It was Jake and Steve Oliver. And he said, well, what you really want to do is Indian up Port Townsend. And I said, yes, we want to Indian up Port Townsend. So our goal is to...
Indian up Port Townsend. So the tribe really liked it. They took it on as a project. They identified 15 places for interpretive signs.
Can we back up a second?
Yeah.
Can we back up a second? In your packet, the cover sheet talks about what our goal is with the trail, and then the next sheet is a brief description of 15 points of interest, and then the next is a longer description of each point of interest, and then we have a map. So you might want to follow along with the map. The map starts at Chetsimoka Park, so if you could just open up your map and follow along.
So the trail was created to tell the story of Chetsimoka and the Squalum people in Port Townsend in a visual and physical way. So it's designed to be a walking, bicycling, and a driving for the elders and people who can't bicycle.
Next one,
after
this.
So where the port is involved, is that they identified three places that are port properties. Point Hudson, it starts at Chetsimoka Park, and it goes down to Point Hudson. And so they would like to put a sign down there at some place. And the orange line you see kind of shows the general flow of the trail. There'll be three different modes, so there'll be three different passages. But it will go around Point Hudson, and then there'll be a sign where the big poster is that they're already working on, a big...
There'll be a big sign at the Maritime Center just to the right of the elevator, and the tribe, if you saw Monday's PDN, is also building, will be carving a totem pole that will be put out on Water Street. And also, they'll be carving an old canoe to be suspended at the Maritime Center.
The next place we understand might be port is the old ferry dock. So they identified that because Chief Chetsumoka had his longhouse quite close to that ferry dock.
He lived there.
This is Indian Town, a picture from Shadows of Our Ancestors. You can see the Indian town of the time in the front of that picture with their longhouses. Next. Union Wharf, we understand, is port property, and they identified that. They wanted to have some kind of a telescope to look over on Indian Island to tell the story of Indian Island. Next. Go ahead.
Oh, the post office. the post office faces Washington Street and what used to be the front door, which is now a window. There's two stairways going up. The two columns on each side of what used to be the front door. Chief Chetsumoka, his brother, and his two wives are carved at the top of the two columns. So that would be our spot number 8 on our trail.
Then for thousands of years, their main village on a little bit more permanent was on the shores of the Katai mudflat, or lagoon, it's a lagoon now. But so they wanted to sign there too. Next.
And
Kai
means pass through.
Pass through, right.
So the number 9 on this map is over by the parking lot?
Right?
Yeah.
Pass through.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And yes, that's in the park. So that's down the city property.
Mm-hmm.
And then at Laurel Grove Cemetery, Chief Chetsumoka and his wife's, or her wife, are buried. Next. A statue, of course, in the golf course, they identified to be on the trail. And they're going to have a separate interpretive sign posted that will tell a little bit more of the story. These are the project partners, Port Townsend's Native Action Group, and then because the Jamestown Sklallam have embraced the project so excitedly, and really are performing a lot of the creative work in the writing of the stories that will appear on the signs, they're writing a booklet to go along with it, and designing the signs. And I believe that's in your packet. The Jefferson County Historical Society was jumping up and down. So they're going to be our fiscal sponsor. So as we fundraise to pay for these $1,500 signs, they're going to handle the financing. And the city of Port Townsend has also partnered to really help grease this skid. So it's fully launched. And I guess we need your blessings for the 3 signs that will appear on the property. And we are also fundraising to make sure there's a maintenance fund. So, you know, we'll try and take care of that.
Would that be the Historical Society that runs the maintenance fund?
Like yes, it would.
The telescope that's being worn would be
right.
Maintenance?
Right. Because they will have a purse for the strings.
And I just want to add that the Jamestown Tribe is paying their in-kind donation is their carving shed to design the signs, their communication specialist to write the signs, write the booklet, their cultural specialist. So they have a lot of input into this already, and they're also paying for all our permit processing.
All permit processing?
Yeah,
yep.
With the city. And we have a date to meet with the Historical Preservation Committee on August 7th.
And they actually are the official kind of sponsors of the project, along with the city now.
The City Historical Preservation?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so that means we'd be partnering with the city then.
I'm always busy with that.
That's good.
Mr.
Thank
Tucker,
you.
We have a federal building, a private building. Well, we can talk about the legal.
A county park.
A county park, a city park, a state park.
Yeah.
And a school,
yeah,
right?
And a fort.
And a fort, yeah.
Have you presented to Jefferson County?
Pardon me?
Have you presented to Jefferson County?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, to their Parks Board. Haven't
Advisory Rec and Parks Board.
Yeah.
Cool. What do you need from us now?
Okay to move forward.
Can we continue to read? I think I could fully wholeheartedly support it.
Yeah. Do we need a motion to?
Do you need a motion?
For the census?
I make a motion that we support the efforts to do the interpretive change, Chetumoka interpretive term.
And authorize staff to work with
them? Yeah, authorize staff to work with them.
And I second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Go get them.
Yeah.
Okay, item B, adoption of proposed budget process and schedule. B.
I know where it is. I just can't find the paper associated with it.
It is page 13.
It is. This.
Almost there?
Yes. Here.
So as part of our two-step process in reviewing and approving the draft schedule for the 2019 budget of the court, this is the second step. So we present to you basically the same thing that you had on the first step. There weren't really any recommendations or concerns with making any changes. So we're just looking for approval.
Yeah, I didn't either. I thought it looked fine.
So I'll make a motion. We approve the draft.
Second it.
All in favor? Aye. The draft is now not the draft. It's now the working budget document. Schedule.
Working budget schedule.
Schedule, yes. Okay. Creation of the Leasing Policy Advisory Committee.
I'll start this off briefly and turn it over to Mr. Taves and Mr. Schmelick for their input. As you are fully aware, we've been looking at various policies related to leasing, and it has been suggested we are bringing forward for your discussion and input and direction of possibility of working with an ad hoc advisory committee on this. So, want to put that before the commission, see what your thoughts were. Mr. Taves, would you like to add anything?
Sure, just again, really briefly, I think the staff memo, which two is brief, kind of outlines one potential approach. This is really an outgrowth of kind of some feedback that we've heard both from the commission as well as the public in prior workshop settings concerning the draft leasing policy, and in particular, comments received in discussion of the commission during the July 18 workshop, where an apparent desire was expressed for some sort of additional citizen input, perhaps through the formation of a committee. What is suggested here is an ad hoc rather than a standing committee, one that would be, in other words, special purpose, and have a very kind of discrete charge outlined by the commission, both in terms of what the expectations were, in terms of product returned to the commission, as well as a time frame for conducting their meetings and returning to the commission with a report and or recommendation. I think while this is not structured as a recommendation, it's one potential action. What I would suggest is, in addition to kind of making sure that it's ad hoc and not standing, ensuring that it's broadly representative of the community. We obviously want and need port tenants to be represented in this group, but we also, I think, need a broader range of interests and perspectives represented if the commission is to move forward with this. And then finally, we would suggest, again, a discrete charge with a set number of meetings, not more than four, returning, for instance, with a report to the commission sometime in September at the latest, so that we can move this policy forward. I know the commission has expressed some frustration previous to now as to the length of time it's taking to get this accomplished, and I think staff too is keen to have an adopted policy that we can work with them. So that's really it. Mr. Schmelick, I don't know if you have any thoughts or concerns that you additionally wish to share.
I think it's a good idea.
if everyone understands what they are. My experience with committees is, number one, they're advisory committees to the commission. So they bring together people with particular expertise as opposed to the general public. It's not uncommon to have these to advise the commission on a discrete function. Here it would be on this policy. I think the staff should finish their work first in incorporating commission changes, and I'm looking at it right now, and then that document ought to go to this group that you select to advise you if there's anything else that needs to be done. I think it's important that that these kind of committees understand that they are not there as your delegates to make the policy. They're there to give you advice on what they think ought to go into a policy. Because a lot of times these committees say, oh, we've been delegated the authority to make the policy. It's ultimately you as the elected public officials make the policy. And so with that narrow scope, I'm sure Eric and I can help the committee work through the policy. They can provide valuable advice given their expertise. Somebody from certainly marine trades, somebody who has some leasing background generally, those kinds of people in the community can really help you by providing advice. And then the last thing is, it doesn't have to be unanimous. They don't have to fight it out until, in my opinion, until they reach a unanimous decision. They just need to make, you know, provide comments that are helpful to the committee, helpful to the commission. So it's your advisors, and they're not doing your work. They're just kind of helping out by providing some expertise and perspective. Those seem to work pretty well. I'm happy to work with them. That's totally up to the commission's discretion. Right now, I'm working through the policy, trying to incorporate all the comments from the commissioners into a coherent policy that will be ready then, end of this week.
And I think one, this is identified in the informational memo. I think if this is the direction that the commission wishes to proceed, that we would be prepared with some suggestions as to both the composition and potential individuals to contact at your August 8th meeting.
Well, I'll reiterate Frank's comment that I think if we do, it's a lot different than what I was thinking in terms of when we did rates for the yard. That really was just a task force we came up with from people who had a specific interest in those rates. And so I think this is a good idea. It's fine. I would shorten it to two meetings. It's a lease policy. It's not the strategic plan, or it's not a huge topic. And I think, finally, I would say that, like, in kind of repeating Frank, they may come to us with a bunch of changes, and we may not do it. We may adopt the policy as Frank writes it. And so I just want to make sure that everybody is aware that it is not a, there is no delegation of authority with this advisory committee. It's simply an advisory committee. We can look at it and take it or leave it.
I think it's valuable. I think the input is valuable. Mm-hmm. Another perspective. I am happy to see this advisory committee go forward as a single purpose ad hoc committee. I point again to the strategic plan and its direction to have a standing advisory committee, and I'd like to at some point move to reconstituting that.
Yeah.
And at that point, then these sorts of committees would then be, subcommittees of that committee, with a member of that standing committee being a member of a subcommittee that might have more specialized individuals in it. But for the moment, I think this is pressing, needs to go forward.
And I think
I might say one of the things I think that makes these successful in my experience is myself and Eric, we're not there to advocate a position, or we're there to explain the work. answer questions, and then let the expertise in the community, which is really what you're looking for, kind of comment on that, make suggestions, you know, make recommendations that then can come back to the commission, and then you can have I think one of the public speakers before talked about the expertise in the community. You can find people that can, you know, really give this a look over and see if it could be improved, kind of thing.
Yeah, I kind of share Pete's concern that we don't want to have as, you know, no more than four meetings is important to have, but I think that less is even better. You know, in other words, if you get have a stalemate or something, you go on to make it stretch out before. But should, you know, with Frank's draft policy and recommendations, I think that there's two really good values or benefits of having this ad hoc committee. One is to go over the stuff we've done, but the second and probably the most valuable is to be an advocate going forward to the community, because we've had recommendations and input from this committee. So,
do we see this ad hoc committee talking about rate of return and lease terms as far as length of leases and rates? Are they going to get involved with the numbers side of this, or just the policy?
I don't think it would be our expectation, or certainly not our recommendation, that they would get involved at that level of detail in terms of numbers, but certainly in more broad terms with respect to the, you know, highest and best use, what does that mean, for instance, we would expect some input, absolutely.
I think first of all, I understand that what I'm doing is supporting staff, so it's going to be staff's document, and I would agree with Eric that as to what the number should be, that's a commission kind of decision. As to the kind of thought behind it in terms of what are the goals of the leasing at the Port of Port Townsend, what is the process, you know, certainly you might want to consider, for example, policy is the length of leases are generally this or that, so you know, it's working off the policy you already looked at, as opposed to the next level, which is implementing the policy, which is rates of return, lease rates, and I might add, we're kind of well down the road. Eric and I and Greg have been working on trying to in terms of organizing that effort. So, but the policy has to be done first. And that's where public input would, I think, from my perspective, be most welcome. You know.
So, what were you working down the road on? You were down the road on the draft policy, or on what,
Eric? And
no. We've been talking about you know, getting a form lease together that everybody can take a look at some future point. Identifying how to implement that draft lease across the board so it's fair to all. But those are in preliminary staff stages, whereas this policy is really ready for some kind of public assistance and evaluation.
Well, I think that we all agree that it's a great idea, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's all nodded yes. We all nodded yes.
Okay.
Go.
Okay.
Make it so.
Okay.
June 2018 financials. Yay, the highlight of the evening.
Okay, so yeah, we continue to do well in the revenue side, the highest that we've been in 5 years. So it looks like it's paying off what they're doing in the yard with the discounts and, you know, trying to get people into the shipyard, working on that. And of course, the marinas are doing really well. They're actually leading the charge, marinas and RV parks. Just really doing very well. And compared to budget, it's, you know, when you compare total budget variance year to date to looking at last year, I mean, we are just really outshining, I think, 2017 and going over budget, so in revenues, which is a good thing. So we could be doing even better when we get to yard operation targets, which is very close. In fact, I compared that in my review here to 2014, because that was the last time we had some nice high numbers in the yard. And we're only about $20,000 year to date off from 2014 numbers.
If I'm not mistaken, 2014 was an outlier. It was like way higher than a lot of previous years, right?
I didn't look further back.
Yes, I believe that's the commissioner.
So that would be nice to have a new standard. So again, looking more beyond the yard and the marinas, property lease and uses, those are down for obvious reasons. As we know, we're working on the leases, lease policies. And also they're working down at the Armory building and the Cupola House. That really affected these revenues too. Basically, the dip in properties and leases is at 20,000. It's not here at Bohannon. And then fuel sales and leases, that's also down, and that I think is pretty directly related to the Quilcene location. There were some staffing choices in the beginning of the year, and then also we had a part go down in the dispenser, and maintenance had a real hard time kind of figuring out what the problem was. But so that took some time, and it took away from our revenues. Ramps revenues are pretty much on par with last year, except for about $2,000, which is directly related to commercial box fees. You know, we had an opening, it's about tribal openings, and we had an opening in June last year and didn't come open until July this year. So, I mean, that was the difference. And then utility revenues, those are ahead of last year too, and ahead of budget. Going on to expenses, expenses are higher than last year by about $62,000, although they are below budget. Some of those are staffing issues. We've had two openings in June that we were looking at. Also, it's just timing of contract service expenditures. And legal and auditing, those sorts of things. They're not always very predictable. They don't spend in a linear way.
The variation in consulting services, are those, is that related to the jetty, or, you know?
Well, if it's jetty related, then it goes to capital.
So that's not so, this.
No. you mean looking at the, what? At the comparative to budget year to date, or comparative to the prior year?
Prior year.
Let's see. I don't know if that's like, if I have detail on that.
So, like 50%.
What do you want?
Where do you want?
The consulting services he's looking at. Yeah, I would have to look into that. I can do that.
What happened with marketing? We set up a number for budgets for marketing.
I think
for the website.
Yeah, I think I might have been a little too ambitious maybe in the budget and thinking we could do it faster than it can actually happen. So I think it's really just timing. I know that it's being worked on. So
we're about to bring a contract forward for website.
They'll spend that money.
Yes, sir.
So, isn't there a marketing effort that's direct mailers to people in Alaska or something that's waiting to go out still? Or?
It's in the process right now, so that hasn't been paid for yet either.
So, I see we have $26,000 below budget. So, is the website and the direct mailer going to take that up?
Yes,
more?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Highly likely not more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. So total operating expenses, like I said, they're about 62,000, more than 17, but below budget by almost 200,000. Then we go to net the non-operating revenues and non-operating expenditures. which aside from the bond interest, the capital contributions and grants, that the timing of those can vary. And of course, I know the jetty, we stopped billing that grant at this point. So that was in the budget as being billed. So that would be some of that variance to the budget. But overall, including the non-operating revenues and expenditures and the NOI from operations, we are up over the prior year by $350,000, which is pretty amazing. And we're also ahead of budget.
Yeah, I have to say that going up to income from operations without depreciation,
mm-hmm.
that's a pretty impressive number, budget to year to date. And well done. Looks good.
Yeah, the revenues have, I think, really pulled us through.
I have a question on the operating expenses. We had salaries and wages were all less because they were in negative in the various year prior year.
Uh-huh.
And employee benefits were substantially more. How did the what in the benefits raised when everything else went down?
Well, we did have PERS that went up last July.
Yeah, but that was last July.
Right, but then it affects this year.
And that was that the big bump that we had? I thought we had a bigger one like even before that. I mean, does this go up like every 6 months or something?
No. It doesn't go up that frequently.
So that big difference there is PERS, right?
It is, but that's some of it. That's not all of it. Have to look at the details on that. Which?
Well, I just thought it was interesting that mm-hmm. salaries and wages went down, but benefits went up.
Right, the contribution for benefits has gone up.
Right.
So we haven't changed any of the contributions like Pete was talking about earlier. We haven't. It's all the same as before, with the exception of fixed cost increases that we can't control, like PERS and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
We haven't
right.
changed anything.
Right. Well, I'll definitely look at that, though, for the next month when we come back.
And then on economic development, I see we have nothing in there. Don't we have $15,000 probably a biannual payment? So we haven't paid that yet?
That actually hit in July.
Yeah.
You'll see that in July.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if it is in July, then it would obviously hit in January. And so if we're year to date, since it's every 6 months, there should be one in there, shouldn't there?
We did have a contract in place.
We didn't?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Do we have an outstanding product requests from EDC or for our contribution?
No, if you'll recall, they came to brief you just a couple meetings ago, and their deliverables are to do that kind of briefing, let you know what kind of outreach they've been doing, etc. So they're up to date on that.
So moving on, the next page talks about debt service. We've got remaining for the year. Well, not today, but as of June 30th anyway, we have about $1 million in debt service outstanding. But July 1st we've paid, which was close to $500,000. So, but that's where we were in June. And also in November, we're going to be paying off the 2013 revenue bond, which would be nice to get that completed.
So you're saying on page 21, I was a little confused on this page.
Oh, uh-huh.
These capital expenses are just up to June, right?
Yes, those are year to date.
So then the capital expenses we approved last meeting will be showing up like under buildings for the roofs that we talked about.
If they were spent, they probably won't be spent by then.
Yeah.
So I think contracts have to be signed and
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Probably September, I guess. Looking at that cash flow there on page 21, starting and like you said, it's all year to date. So the net income of operations and non-operating together of $1 million, and then the net change in accruals from the balance sheet is $114,000. Less the principal payments on debt. And so we have a year-to-date increase in cash of almost $600,000, which is pretty nice. Now June was really strong, which was a great way to go into season. So, and then the next few pages are the five-year trends, the marinas and RV parks revenue. Is doing very well. It's been the best in 5 years. The following page is the yard revenues, and those are on par ahead of 3 of the 5 years in June. And then the following page with the facilities and operations. Am I missing a page? Oh, I skipped the property and lease revenues. And that one's pretty flat, but I think that there's plans to get that turned around pretty quickly. And then, yeah, facilities and operations expenses. It's higher than any other year to date, but not outside, not too far outside the trend.
No, that looks good. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. I would just like to thank you, Commissioner Hanke, for your comments. I think port staff, including Greg and his team, but really the entire staff of the organization has a much better understanding of our budget and a focus on that, both on cost containment as well as really realizing that we can be much more active in how we approach our revenues. And so I think you're beginning to see the fruits of that and somewhat of a cultural shift from being a very passive organization where kind of the business either shows up to a business that is really going out there and actively marketing and trying to bring the business in. And we are certainly not done with that. We're already looking forward to the fall as some of our marketing efforts, including the mailer that talked about to Alaska, as well as other efforts. We'll be having that plan. We'll brief you on that here in the coming weeks. But we also hope to work with our tenants in the marine trades to do some joint marketing efforts and really make sure that we have a strong end of the year coming up. We do need to be mindful with the discounted or the addition of the rate that we have for longer than 2 months that we are going to need to make up some quite a bit of that in volume, so we really do need to increase our occupancy even more. I will note that also that we had a very aggressive budget for our sales and our revenue projections, and we are meeting those and exceeding those, and so I'm very, very pleased with the performance of the staff. So I would just like to really give a shout out to every single employee in the organization for their focus.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we're to staff comments now.
I don't have much. I think Kimberly will talk about the cancellation of the caravan. Biggest thing on.
Well, I
should
maybe
wait. Go
ahead, say something now.
Well, let me just go to you, and then. But I was also kind of interested. I'm not really sure I've heard much about what's going to actually be happening on the website.
So I'll address the caravan first. So the caravan stage company was supposed to perform Nomadic Tempest this past Tuesday through Saturday, and unfortunately there's been a delay in their visas, receiving their visas from Canada. Well, not from Canada, but in between the U.S. and Canada. So they have called us and asked if we would consider rescheduling for September. So that kind of fits into our schedule a little bit better anyway, with the timing of when the sun sets and when the show needs to start. It would be an 8:30 start versus a 10 p.m. start, which would have happened now. And we tried to explain during the week in Port Townsend, a 10 p.m. showtime may not be the best on a Tuesday evening. So September might actually work out better. I know that I've reached out to a lot of tenants that are over at Point Hudson to let them know they were pretty excited about the potential changes. So we don't have any dates in stone right now. We're kind of looking at schedules and see what might fit in for them. As far as the website.
Oh, before we leave that, I was just wondering about the potential impact on Port Townsend or Point Hudson tenants. Is this something that in general the tenants of Point Hudson were looking forward to, or something they were dreading because it's going to disrupt their business?
I would say, and Commissioner Henke could probably jump in, although we've been dealing with Ashley on the Puget's. on the Puget Sound Express side, but TJ and I went out and personally talked to the businesses, and they were super excited about the concept of what this theatrical performance is going to be, and we have done everything in our power to reduce the impact that that has on the businesses, including not closing the street down until after your regularly scheduled business hours, in addition to working with tenants to relocate them for parking situations if something like that were to come up, if somebody had work late, or I mean something as simple as one of the tenants has a dog that they sometimes bring to work that they keep in the car. So it was something as simple as, hey, I need to make sure I have a shaded spot for the car for the dog. He said, no problem. As long as we know what that is, we'll work together to address it and figure it out. So overall, I think people were super excited about it. We were over at Picnic Kayaks, and they were excited about it. And we said, well, now that we told you so much about the performance, tell us more about your kayaks. So that was kind of a nice trade-off. And just heard from Christian and Brian Toss today. They're excited to hear that it's coming back. I know a couple people were like, oh, is it not going to come back? And they were excited to see we'll reschedule with them during a time that their visas are more in tune with the timing.
Thank you.
I talk about the website now.
Yeah.
So we just closed out, reached out to, did I reach out to six? I can't remember. Six different consultants that were on the MRSC roster regarding information technology needs for websites. So the deadline for them to respond was this past Monday. I have those responses. We'll be going through the packets that they've submitted to move forward in issuing a contract for work to begin. So that's pretty much it right now. There's
so
no news but news.
And so what it's looking for is someone to redo the website and maintain it, or just redo it and we maintain it?
Well, there's a fine line in maintenance. They will host. Mm-hmm. So we maintain the content of the website, but they will actually host the website and assist with ensuring all of the backups are there for public records information. And if something were to go terribly wrong, they're the individuals that we call in to secure all the backup pieces. But as far as content, we're the ones pushing content onto the site. The contract consultant will not be doing that.
Yeah, this is Catherine. We just want to make sure that they have the tools in place to capture all of the different website changes according to the retention schedule.
Yeah.
I imagine they would if they're recommended by MRSC, but just would want to check on that. And I'm happy to look at that too if you need any assistance.
We've got that in there.
Okay, great.
Greg, did you have something for us?
Not that exciting yet. We did pass, our septic is good, we'll see. We hired somebody to go down. It's the most important thing other than water. So that was really good news because there was a lot of back and forth with different parties. And it was just nice to get clarity. So it's not to say that there isn't more work to be done with septic maintainment, but we're through that. Same thing with the, we had the Department of Ecology come out and inspect all of our fueling facilities, and we got Greenville Health there too.
I'm sorry, you had the ecology inspect?
They inspect annually, they inspect all our fueling facilities.
Oh, fueling.
Wilson, and also here, right here, Elliot, our doctor, and we got Greenville Health right there as well. So
they inspected it before we had the new dispenser down there?
Yeah, but you're okay as long as you, they can see that there's a plan and that you've got everything in place to put it. You know, it's not like everything's always working perfectly, but they want to make sure that you actually have been proactive in taking the steps. Yeah.
So it's on order, mm-hmm. And takes a while for the parts to be delivered.
So Eric can sleep at night now.
Mm-hmm. And that was the same situation actually in Quilcene, is that the parts are really long lead times. Mm-hmm. These just, they're difficult things to purchase, actually. You wouldn't think they are because they're everywhere, but believe it or not, you have to go through this process. So get the parts down for Quilcene and get that up and running. We knew what was wrong, there was a long lead time on the part. So anyway, that's great. And I really want to, just recognize really everybody, the guys in all the yard crew people, and they've been really pushing it pretty hard. They had, we've had year to date, we've had a record number in the past 5 years for haul off to the shipyard. And then they're just right almost on par with for the boatyard for the same number for the maximum, like 413. And then I think we did 416 and everything else. The other years were quite a bit below. So as far as the haul outs, they're doing an awful lot of good work. And I just think that they've done a great job. And so I don't take it for granted. Also, the maintenance crew, at least got, they literally put scaffolding up. We had to go for the server room up on the admin building. I was sitting there and within the, you know, nothing flat, Charlie put the scaffolding, erected it, gone up, drilled a hole in the side, you know, gone through the side of the building and put in HVAC system in order to control that so that it doesn't overheat to compromise integrity of our servers. And disassembled it and was down, and next thing I know, they're over at Point Hudson, over at the duplex, ripping out the carpeting, and we're trying out different things over there to offset the creosote smell. But they're frank and appreciate it very much. So
trying different things at the duplex to offset the creosote?
Yeah, we were trying out a air exchange system and then also filtering the air that's in the inside. It's a compartmentalized area, so it's a little bit more controlled, so we can a little bit easier to test
some
things
out. Some of our experiments.
Yeah. I got to tell you, that's the only building I've been in that I could actually smell the creosote when I went in, and it was pretty strong.
Yeah, it's pretty strong.
Yeah, I think there was a lot. It was just embedded in the carpeting, and it wasn't that great. So we're moving forward there. But they're doing a lot of work. It's nice to see it. So that's it.
I don't want to repeat everything that was in the staff update that is on the website, but just to reiterate, I think we have some good news on the stormwater front with respect to the runway rehab and taxiway project. You'll recall that we had to undertake some amendments to the contract and scope with Reed Middleton to essentially downscope, but refocus their efforts on getting over this kind of stormwater jump that was kind of unanticipated, and also obstructions analysis. Landau was retained as the subconsultant to Reed Middleton to do the stormwater analysis. The information that we have is that no increase in the size of the stormwater system will be necessary under the current stormwater manual, and that's really kind of unalloyed good news. We're waiting for the final sign-off from Jefferson County Public Works to agree with that assessment and the conclusions that we've reached, and we're hopeful that that's forthcoming in the near future. Just to echo Greg's comments, maintenance staff just each and every day bust it out. And one of the things that I think the FAA was concerned about was obstructions. One obstruction in particular off the 27 end of the runway that had been identified. I think we're anxious to have that resolved before entering into a new airport improvement program grant for phase two of the work, and staff was out there last week and cut a number of the larger trees in that thicket to remove the obstruction, so that's good news.
Those are the ones that are on airport property?
Correct.
Another one or two?
There's still one tree that is off property on Cala Point, or on Prospect, I believe, and it is predictably straddling the right-of-way line between county property and I think it's lot number 8 of Cala Square. So we'll be working with the landowners there to see how best to address that obstruction in the near term. And then finally, you may be aware that the FAA announced $1 billion in discretionary monies available to non-primary airports nationwide. It's a competitive process for projects that are in process, like ours. And it's a 1 October deadline, coincident with the federal fiscal year. to make application for those monies. The good news is that that is 100% money, no match required. So what we will be attempting to do is seeking essentially 100% funding for phase three construction of the project. Again, it's a competitive process and wouldn't know until late in the year or early in 19 how we fared, but I think we meet the eligibility criteria and we have a good project and a good case to make.
Can we add to that, like the Quonset hut where Scott is falling down?
I've preliminarily have that type of conversation, not specific to the Quonset hut, with Mary Vargas of the FAA Seattle ADO, but and I think her advice was that, number one, that that would be unlikely to meet the eligibility criteria, and that you're in a good position to potentially receive 100% money for phase three.
So how much is phase three worth?
Well, again, the initial estimate, and this is a planning level estimate before engineering has even reached the 60% phase, we're at about 40% design and engineering right now, is $4.380 million. And that does include at least some money in there for both construction phase engineering support as well as construction management. And as we indicated, I think during the meeting with the pilots in early April, we're anxious to, and we wish to ensure professional construction management of a project of this magnitude to ensure that we stay on time and disrupt activities at the JCIA as minimally as possible.
But that's what that $4 million translates to, about 200,000 to us after the 90% FAA.
That's
and
correct.
5%
that's
marsh done.
Yeah, so the potential port savings would be on the order of 225.
Which ain't cheap, I mean.
Still,
yeah.
Doubles our net for the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it.
Thank you. So, there you go.
I'm just very happy of the HVAC system in the server room.
Saved
my
down.
Servers. Yeah, yeah.
Got it just in the nick of time.
Yeah.
Okay. Staff, commissioner comments.
Had a really great tour from Mark Horton. George Yunt and I toured the stormwater system and talked about all the details and gazintas and gazautas. It was very interesting. So now I understand more than I need to know about the stormwater system. Had a lovely trip to Cle Elum for the WPPA commissioners meeting. Had a really great talk on tribal and port relationships. It's kind of the highlight of my stay. Of course, getting to talk to other commissioners about how they do, what they do, where they do it. And I think that's probably it for me.
And I'm good.
And I also went to the commissioner conference and I took away quite a bit from the tribal relations issues, and of course we have some tribal relations right here. We have some really good ones, as indicated tonight from the James House Clown. We also have some interestingly difficult ones, as evidenced by the level tribal crab fishery that happened here recently. And as a result of these, I've been able to get in contact with some people where we can hopefully have some substantive discussions to avoid that from happening again, and that's going to be taking a bunch of time in the near future. And I had another interesting conversation with a guy that I sold my business to. He didn't think of fixing cars hard enough, so he decided to become a policeman for fun. And he comes down here at the port and indicated that we really need to look at getting a security guy. He said that things are difficult and downgrading. So. I brought that up with staff, and I think that it'll be good to get an another person on staff here so we can keep things better at night. Okay.
I have one thought.
Oh.
Make one quick comment. Back to JCIA. Old hangars. There is a taxiway where you can now not taxi on it because there's so much blackberry growth happening that the wing cap gets captured
with the pit side.
Yeah. So if you're just something a comment that you might wanna
take back blackberries.
Yes.
Actually, and what happened is we actually had a plane get hung up in the blackberries.
Wow.
And they had to go out and hand push it out of the
are those blackberries a profit center?
Okay,
well, everybody.
So the next public workshop and business meeting will be Wednesday, August the 8th at 9:30, and then the business meeting August 8th at 1:00 right here. Okay, we have lots of executive sessions to keep us occupied this afternoon. We have two potential litigations, RCW 42.30.110(1), parentheses I. We have a discussion of minimum price at which real estate will be offered for lease, 42.30.110(1)(1C). And review the performance of a public employee, RCW 42.30.110(1)(G). And, I don't know.
6 hours.
Yeah, I'm gonna start it. Oh, there's not gonna be any decisions, are there? Well, I mean, we would have to come back to a meeting, but.
No, I don't believe
we're gonna have any decisions, so.
I don't believe any decisions, Commissioner.
So we're gonna start at, well, there's no way to get this done less than an hour. So we'll start with an hour, and then we'll probably see if anyone's left.
Okay. So, Frank has taken the better part of valor and stayed on that side of the sound. And
self-information,
and
ability to
capture.
Okay. Okay, so this meeting is adjourned to executive session.